don't. I can get one for you if it'd be helpful.
Wild man from southern Minnesota saves the day. It's full of good solutions.
I'd like to call to order the Transportation Subcommittee on Airways, Waterways, and Railways. It's Thursday, February 26. Let it be noted that a quorum is present. Our agenda today starts with Senate File 479, Senator Sharon. She is not here, so we go right to number two, Senate File 36, Senator Bach. Duluth International Airport Bond Issue and Appropriation, Senate File 36. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Duluth Airport is in my legislative district, and we have a terminal building there that is very inadequate, especially post 9/11. So this is a bonding request that for a shovel-ready project that actually has a bid date in May. So in the interest of saving time for the committee, I'll turn it over to the executive director of the airport promptly.
Madam Chair, my name is Brian Ricks. I'm executive director of the Duluth Airport Authority, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today. What I'd like to do is give you a little background, first of all, on the Duluth International Airport, and then we'll move right into the project. We had the State Department of Employment and Economic Development did a study that came out in December of last year, indicating that the Duluth aviation sector generates 4,400 jobs in our region and accounts for about a $1.3 billion regional economic impact. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. This is our airport facility. It's on 3,100 acres. We have a 10,100-foot primary runway. That is a tremendous asset for the region. It allows any aircraft that's flying to land at this facility. The only longer runway in the state is the crosswind runway at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. We have instrument approaches to all the runways, and we've got available property for development. Our air service has been intact since 1931 when Northwest Airways started serving the airport. Northwest also serves our facility with a range of aircraft, the largest being Airbus A320s, which are 150-seat aircraft. We also have direct service through Northwest Delta to Detroit. And we have Allegiant Air, which is a low-cost carrier. Allegiant Air was the, I think, only profitable carrier in 2008. But they've developed a niche where they're going into some of the smaller airports and providing nonstop service to destinations such as Las Vegas, Orlando, Phoenix, and they just opened up Los Angeles as well. We also have about 30 to 40 charter aircraft flights, and these are 150-seat aircraft through Sun Country and Extra Airways and a few others. This is a route map of a combined Delta Northwest route, and you can see it certainly covers the gamut of the country, and it gives us access to pretty much anywhere in the domestic United States, along with many places in the world. So that air service is extremely important to us. This is a copy of the Allegiant Air service area. And I wanted to show this because it demonstrates on a low-cost carrier where we are drawing passengers from. And every area that is shaded on that map is where we are bringing in passengers from. And you can see it goes as far east as the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, as far west to Bemidji, as far south to the St. Cloud area, and as far north up into many areas of Canada. So we're getting some of these Canadians to come down, spend the night in the Duluth area, buy dinners, and then fly out to or fly in Allegiant the next day. Our passenger numbers look like this. Traditionally, we've been in the roughly 300,000 to 350,000 total passengers. Really, when you look at airports across the state, you have obviously Minneapolis, the main hub airport, with millions of passengers. Then you have Duluth and Rochester, generally in the 300 to 350,000 passenger range, followed by other smaller airports, generally in the 30 to 40,000 passenger range. So It's a significant passenger volume for our outstate airport. We also have Monaco Air, which is our fixed base operator in Duluth. I show this slide because they are promoting international tech stops. These are large corporate aircraft that are flying, are destined between Europe and the West Coast. Monaco has done a very good job of identifying Duluth as a stopping point for these corporate carriers to clear customs and buy fuel before they head on to the West Coast. And what you see is we are seeing this type of aircraft drop into Duluth. They like Duluth because it's a non-congested airport. But dropping in there, buying fuel, which they are taxed on, that goes back into the state airports fund, is a tremendous benefit for our state. Traditionally, this traffic has stopped in Bangor, Maine. A lot of this traffic stops in Bangor, Maine or Fargo, and we want to do all we can to bring this traffic into Duluth. We're also home to the 148th Fighter Wing. They provide over 1,200 full and part-time jobs. They're on alert 24 hours a day, 365 days per year. And they are an excellent partner in economic development in Duluth. Cirrus, I'm sure you're aware of. Cirrus has recently moved part of their operation to the north side of the airfield. That's the former Northwest Airbus maintenance facility. They are leasing that space currently, and they have about 200 employees working on their new jet research and development program, and they're working on certification for that aircraft. Cirrus, to give you an idea, purchased products locally of $17.5 million to support their aircraft manufacturing. Statewide, over $41 million in purchased products and a payroll of over $50 million. Obviously, we've seen some downturns in the last year, but eventually will pick up. Additionally, there's a lot of spin-off business related to Cirrus, Northstar Aerospace, SCS Aircraft Interiors, Hydro Solutions are all companies that have really grown up with Cirrus and promoted our aviation sector. Moving on to the terminal facility, we started looking at this project back in 2003. It's really a result of post-9/11 security, FAA and ADA issues that we have that necessitate this new facility. FAA did fund first phase design in 2008. We received a grant of $1.8 million, so we have moved forward with design, and the project will be ready for bid on May 7th of this year. I should say first phase of the project. Why do we need this facility? It is the existing terminal is very dysfunctional. It's a very narrow building. It's multiple levels, and it produces a lot of congestion. Here you see a picture of the check-in area and the congestion of people that are leading out into the other corridors of the facility. As people go upstairs, typically in airports, you go through a centralized screening location. We do not have a centralized screening location because we do not have elevators and facilities on the air side that would permit that. So individuals go up. Again, it's a very congested environment. There are multiple screening locations that you have to pass through in order to get into what we call a sterile environment. And this is what we end up with. We end up with seating areas that are inadequate. There are no restrooms in these areas. There are no concessions in these areas, and there is not a way to modify the space in order to allow that to occur. So if individuals go through screening and they need to use a restroom, their only option is to go back out through screening and come back in. This type of situation also reduces our ability to generate revenues because most people like to get through screening and then buy concessions after that point. The other issue we have is the current facility is too close to the runway environment. Over the years, FAA restrictions have become more stringent. And that top part of that slide, you see a dash line, which actually comes off our runway at a 7-to-1 ratio. When aircraft are parked at our gates, the tails of those aircraft penetrate that what is supposed to be protected airspace, As a result, that is a non-standard situation from an FAA standpoint. It is for this reason that FAA is committed to the project. They want to see this issue resolved. And how we resolve it is we move the building back and we pull the apron back to what will be a new facility. The new facility will be constructed just south of the existing facility. You can see on the map a dotted line that shows the existing facility. The Airport Authority did look at a lot of options when considering this replacement terminal. This was the most cost-effective and efficient option because we are taking advantage of the existing apron infrastructure and concrete that's already in place. The first phase of the project will involve new roads, site grading, utilities, infrastructure, the parking areas in order to make room then for the new building, which is going into the short-term parking area. From a cost standpoint, the project overall is a $65 million project. The building itself is $42.3 million. The apron and site utilities is $23 million. We have funding commitments of $25 million through the Federal Aviation Administration. The Duluth Airport Authority is also committing $6 million in what we call FAA entitlement funding that we receive based on the number of passengers that go through our facility. And we are also committing about $8 million in passenger facility charges and passenger facility charge-backed bonds for this project. The funding that is needed is $16.6 million in bonding. We are requesting $4.9 million in 2009 to commence first phase construction. And we're also looking for other sources of funding through Airports Trust Fund, Homeland Security, and some other miscellaneous grants that we will receive. Northwest Airlines supports the project, and we are believe that this is an excellent stimulus project as it is ready to go. It leverages large amounts of federal dollars. We believe we will get some stimulus money. We have not heard yet, but we should hear within the next few days. It is on the list, and as I said earlier, it fits. It really fits the list because it's a ready-to-go project. It will create in excess of 200 construction jobs and, again, is a good stimulus project for our region. That is the extent of my presentation, and I'm happy to address any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ricks. Are there questions or comments for Mr. Ricks about this excellent project? Anyone? Senator Skoy?
Madam Chair, I would move the bill for Senator Bach.
Senator Skoy moves that Senate file number 36 be recommended to pass and referred to the full committee. All who may be in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Sharon brings us Senate File 479.
Thank you very much, Chair Rest. Senate File 479 is an appropriation request of $10 million for rehabilitation of the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority to rehabilitate a railroad track from Norwood Young America to Hanley Falls. You should have received an orange packet of materials. It would have looked something like this. And there is a visual in there for you to be able to get a sense of what it is that we're talking about. This is the Minnesota Regional Valley Regional Rail Authority. It consists of these counties: Carver County, Sibley County, Renville, Redwood, and Yellow Medicine counties in southern Minnesota. And they own the short line railroad operated by the Minnesota Prairie Line Incorporated. What this money will be utilized for is phase two of three phases of an upgrade to this project. The first phase restored the line that had been allowed to deteriorate to 10 mile an hour service. It was completed in 2002. Phase two of this project, which these dollars will be used for, replaced the 1880s lightweight rail with heavier rail, which is the industry standard today. And this will enable 25 mile per hour operations. Right now it's operating at about 7 to 10 miles an hour, depending on what's being hauled. So 10 of these 94 miles of railroad have been upgraded as of December in 2006. It really is essential for the long-term viability of the rail line and the communities along the rail line and their economic activity that it serves to become a 25-mile-per-hour line on the entire 94-mile track. So that's the essence of what I will be saying with you today. I have others here with me to speak about this, the importance of this project, including the chair of the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority that represents these counties, also Rob Edwards, who is the vice president of Distribution Guidecraft in Winthrop, Minnesota. And I think you'll find his presentation very interesting because he has organized a coalition of these counties and cities and chambers to help raise, sing the song, so to speak, about what the value of this is, not only to our region, but to the state. And Gene Short, who's a retired Redwood County commissioner who has been working for the Prairie Line Rail for a long period of time. So with that...
Who's going to go first?
I think Mr. Pinsky will be the first.
Mr. Pinsky, welcome to the subcommittee. We're happy to have your testimony. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
My name is Bruce Pinsky. I'm the chair of the Minnesota Regional Valley Rail Authority. I've been here before in front of this committee. I'm not going to spit a lot. Is that on?
Yeah, it's on, but you got a poor rating.
All right. I won't be spending a lot of time. I think the time from the coalition will be more important. I just want to reiterate that the committee is a government-owned authority, and just in case you, the certificate's here, so you know. And from my company, which is Seneca Foods, I had one thing to say. You know, Seneca Foods is the number one vegetable processor in the world. You talk about short areas and that type of thing, but we ship products to every state in the United States and every country in the world, and we use the rail extensively, and it's important part of our business, and as you hear from the coalition, it'll be important part of many of their businesses. And the benefits, there are many benefits that they will talk about in their presentation. And with that, I want to turn it over to the coalition president, and that's, like the senator said, represents all towns. It's from the five counties, so other people than just the border are giving us some input. Rob Edwards. Sorry about my voice. I don't know what
happened.
That's
quite all right. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us. My name is Robert Edwards. I reside in Winthrop. I am VP of Distribution for Guidecraft, a children's toy and educational company located in Winthrop. One of the proudest titles I have, other than being a Winthrop City Councilman and serving on the EDA as well, is that I have been asked to chair a coalition of the five counties and 15 communities up and down the 94 miles of the Prairie Line. This line stretches from Norwood Young America out to Hanley Falls. It is a vital piece of economic growth for us in our area. Part of representing those communities up and down the line, you'll see that in your packet we've got resolutions from townships, from cities, from county commissions up and down that line in support of this economic development tool. On that note, I'd like to share a little bit of news with you that will be on KEYC out of Mankato this afternoon. Land of Lakes announced today that they are building an 80,000-square-foot distribution facility in Winthrop, and one of the main reasons was that they're putting it in an industrial park directly adjacent to this rail line. One of the many things we have going for us in Winthrop and all up and down the line, but specifically Winthrop, if you'll allow me to toot the horn for the good folks of Winthrop, is that we have UFC, United Farmers Co-op, we have Heartland Corn Products Ethanol Plant, our largest shipper on the line. Now we're going to have this huge 80,000-square-foot distribution facility. Basically, I wanted to share with you that we're here today because we're what Minnesotans are all about. Minnesotans like you, your mothers and fathers, and your parents, their parents, proud, hardworking families. All of you have given the ideas, the muscle, the moral courage, and yes, the spiritual strength to make this a great state. Today we meet to go forward with those values that have never failed us. And those values are love for family and neighborhood, dignity of work, and a commitment of service to our fellow man. every generation faces a choice of hope or despair, to plan for scarcity or to embrace possibilities. Minnesotans don't accept limits. We transcend them. We don't settle. We succeed. We have the potential with the revitalization of this line to positively affect the economic growth patterns of every community along the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Line for the next 30 to 40 years. Every community in this region of the rail line has the potential of new industrial and commercial growth, more families and more children enrolled in our schools, and an increased tax base to provide vital local community services. The simple facts are that rail adds transportation capacity and reduces highway cost. Rail promotes economic development and productivity. Rail invites and supports international trade. Rail is more fuel efficient. Rail directly relates to our national security, and rail is environmentally friendly. I'll wrap it up by leaving you with a Chinese proverb I've learned years ago, and it's basically, a good community exists when its elders plant trees to shade the next generation. We're asking you to help us plant those trees for this region, for that next generation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Are there questions or comments from Mr. Edwards? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I know you said this, but I didn't quite catch it. Could you talk a little bit about the materials? And you said the largest producer or user of the railroad?
The largest shipper currently, yes, sir. I'm sorry. Largest shipper currently is Heartland Corn Products, our ethanol plant located in Winthrop. Also in Winthrop, we have a fertilizer plant owned by United Farmers Co-op that just opened a year ago. And then we have other shippers, and I could refer to our operators who are here with us today to give you specifics on the all of the different shippers, but we do have in your packet as well the shippers that are currently on the line. Yes, sir, it is in there under the map on that on the left hand side.
Thank you. I'll look at that.
Thank you. Thank you for your question.
Chair Rest.
Senator Sharon.
Excuse me, I failed to say that we have with us the mayor of the city of Bellevue also would like to speak to the committee.
That's just fine. We'll hear from all your testifiers. We know that they've come a good distance.
Thank
you. Who will be next, Senator Sharon?
Next will be former Commissioner Gene Short.
Mr. Short, welcome to the committee, and we're pleased to have your testimony. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and for the record, my name is Gene Short. I'm a retired Redwood County Commissioner and am a retired Vice Chair of the Rail Authority. However, I am the Chair of the Legislative Committee for the Now Volunteer Coalition Group that has worked so diligently to bring this to you today with the help of Senator Sharon.
Wonderful.
We do have in your packets today a lot of information for you. On the left-hand side is the bullet point piece, the nice pocket piece that you can refer to when you're sitting in committee and wondering what to read and to entertain yourselves. So I would refer you to that. It shows the map, but it also lists a lot of our shippers. Today, I'd like to thank Senator Sharon for letting me borrow these pieces of rail that I brought from her office. This is presently what is on most of the rail line, this 90-pound rail. This is what we are attempting to achieve, is the 115-pound rail that will allow us to do 25 miles per hour, will allow us to ship unit trains of 100 cars or more, and also then would open up this market so that we can ship going west, not east, to go west. I would really, if I might just take you back a few years, going back about 16 years when this railroad was virtually in ashes in the Phoenix and nothing was happening. It has taken a long time and it's taken a lot of our legislators, both in the Senate and the House, to help us with this. It's taken a lot of help from our federal government to help us with not what they call earmarks anymore. It's now called the Representatives Initiative, so we can go with that.
Opportunities.
Right. There's been a lot of good positives that came from this, not only in the saving of dollars for freight, for shipping, but the congestion, the wear and tear on the roads. And last but not least, the buzzword today is the greenhouse gas emissions. I'd like to thank Senator Dibble for his Senate File 549 that addresses greenhouse gas reduction. And within your packet today is a piece that we included for you showing the savings of CO2 pounds by shipping rail versus truck. And this is a three-year running piece that gives you those numbers. We did not refer to any of the stats where we did get this information, but it did come from Peter Sabarowski of Minnesota Pollution Control, and so I do have that information for you for background if you do need that. But you can see the appreciable amount of savings in the CO2 emissions just starting in 2006, going to 2007, and then up to 2008. With that, Madam Chair, I would stand for questions if anybody has any questions.
Are there questions or comments for Commissioner?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Rest. I'm going to invite our mayor from Bellevue, Marlo Sander, to the table. And while he's getting himself adjusted there, I just want you to know that there are so many benefits from this project. It is shovel-ready. It meets that criteria. The more money we can pile into this, the more jobs we can create, the more we can create an economic development tool in this area. And it is all those good things that Commissioner Short was just talking about, but I just want to add one more. These communities along this line have businesses on their main streets and schools that are needing to have the support that comes when we grow small communities. And our investment in this has so many positive outcomes from it that continue to filter out from the shippers shipping, from the jobs that come to build the railroad, and then the jobs that come in this community, the families that join them to support the Winthrops and the Gaylords and the Bellevues. And with that, I'll turn it over to our mayor.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Marlo Sander. I'm the mayor of a small town of Bellevue, about 400 people. And I look at it, it's not just Bellevue or the entire rail, but it's the western part of, you know, there's primarily small towns like Bellevue that we can all take a benefit of the opportunities that if we had a better rail. I've been mayor for the last 6 years, and we get inquiries, you know, of businesses coming to town, and the rail would be one asset to us, definitely.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for the mayor? Senator Sharon, do you have any further comments or further testifiers?
I think that the bill is pretty straightforward, and I would answer any questions you might have, but we're hoping that we will.
Any questions for Senator Sharon? Senator Youngbauer?
Madam Chair, I would move Senate File 479.
Senator Youngbauer moves Senate File 479 be recommended to pass and referred to the full committee. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much,
Senator
Sharon.
Thank you.
And your advocates. Good luck. Senator Murphy. Senator Murphy, which of your two bills would you like to take first? Senator Murphy is bringing up Senate File 141, Port Development Assistance Program Bond Issue and Appropriation. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senate File 141 is the Port Development Assistance Program, and most of the members on this committee know exactly what happens at these ports, but as we know, with some of the budget reductions that have happened over the past few years, the Port Development Assistance Fund has kind of went downhill. I do have a historical, Ms. Boyd gave me the historical perspective on the Port Development Assistance Fund and what we've put in it, but as you may recall, the Port Development Assistance Fund is used for a lot of different...
Just a moment. Yes. If you would take your conversation out into the hallway, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
But as many of you, and Mr. White is here with me today from the Red Wing Port Authority to provide testimony and maybe give some specific examples of how this money is used. But, you know, water ports are a very very important part of our overall transportation system. As a matter of fact, I was stopped in the hallway by a representative from the wheat and barley growers and said that they'd passed a resolution in support of this. A lot of our grain haulers use the port, especially in Red Wing. We have a pretty extensive operation there. And it helps, lower our food cost every place because we know that barges are absolutely the cheapest form of transporting mass quantities of goods, especially grains. With that, Madam Chairman, I'd just like to talk just a second about this historical perspective. Starting back in 1998, and that's as far as the numbers run here, we've traditionally put a little bit of money in the Port Development Assistance Fund every year. There were, 98, 4.5 million, 99, 3 million, 2000, 2 million, 01, a million, and then we had 3 years in a row where there was nothing. And then in 05 and 06, it was a total of 5.7, and then the last couple of years, we haven't been able to put any money in there. We've got a tremendous backlog of projects, and like I said, this is absolutely one of the most economical and environmentally friendly ways of transporting mass quantities of product. So I'll let Mr. White talk.
Mr. White, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Myron White. I'm the executive director of the Red Wing Port Authority. And on behalf of Red Wing and the Minnesota Ports Association, I'd like to thank Senator Murphy and members of the subcommittee for your past support of the Port Development Assistance Program. Now, as Senator Murphy alluded to, this program allows our public ports to really maintain the critical infrastructure. Now, much of the infrastructure of, I know, the ports in Red Wing dated back, pre-World War II days, but before any improvement, between the improvements that were made in the 90s and early 2000. The program helps support the movement of those products in and out of the state of Minnesota and through the upper Great Lakes and the upper Mississippi waterway system. And we have a considerable pent-up demand for the infrastructure improvements, as Senator Murphy, the last 2 years, the 2007 bonding bill, that entire bill was vetoed, and then again in 2008 we fell victim to a line item veto. But the efficient transshipment of cargo benefits, through Minnesota ports, benefits all kinds of sectors of the Minnesota economy, and this has been the primary way in the last decade or so that we've worked to maintain our port infrastructure. Now, as an example, with the Red Wing Port Authority, we located what we call our bulkhead, our bulk transfer facility, where we load and offload cargo. It's a Port Authority-owned facility, but the original facility, and we use Port Development Assistance Funds to move that facility. And the original facility was in the north end of our community, and when we offloaded materials to the final user, it required a truck trip to and through the heart of downtown Red Wing, and it generated thousands of truck trips every summer, going back and forth from our bulkhead to the manufacturing facility. When we moved the bulkhead, we moved that bulkhead to the south end of our facility, much closer to the end user, and that eliminated literally all of those truck trips through downtown Red Wing. And as you know, if you visited downtown Red Wing in the summertime, it can be congested, and actually the route that the trucks most often took was right past our local YMCA. So not only was there that congestion of downtown, but in the summertime with young people running in and out of the YMCA, downtown Red Wing, because of this project, has become far safer and much less congested because of it. Other communities, the Port of Duluth, we've rehabilitated warehouse roofs and repaired several areas of their dock wall, addressed transportation needs by rehabilitating railroad tracks and road access to the facilities. The Port of Winona was actually able to remove a sunken barge, which was disrupting commercial traffic in and out of the Port of Winona. They also replaced some barge mooring facilities and constructed a new mooring cell, rehabilitated their existing commercial dock, and really made it a multimodal facility. St. Paul, you know, like Duluth, has rehabilitated some warehouse roofs and repaired several areas of their dock wall, dredged a barge fleeting area, and upgraded a barge mooring facility. So a lot of work has been done and a lot of good work with the Port Development Assistance monies. I think the benefits of our public ports were best described as, you know, former member of the Ports Association and retired Seaway Port Authority Director Davis Halberg. And he said, waterborne commerce uses less energy, causes less environmental degradation, generates less waste disposal, is responsible for fewer accidents, and creates less societal disruption. And to top it off, it's almost always the cheapest mode of transportation you could choose. With your continued support, we can address that backlog of infrastructure projects that we have and continue to provide that low-cost transshipment of Minnesota commodities. Now, thank you for your past support, and I'd be pleased to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. White. Are there questions or comments for Mr. White from the Red Wing Port Authority? Apparently not. Senator Murphy, did you want to make a motion?
Madam Chairman, then I would move that Senate File 141 be recommended and pass and be referred to
the full committee.
Full committee.
Senator Murphy moves that Senate File 141 be recommended to pass and referred to the full committee. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Murphy and Mr. White. And then, Senator Murphy, did you want to take up Senate File 642?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senate File 642, Rail Service Improvements Bond Issue and Appropriation.
Madam Chair and committee members, this bill is a little bit different than the Port Authority bill. The last bill we heard, we normally put money in that account, we appropriate it, it gets spent. The rail service account, the Mercy program, as it's called, is a little bit different because there are, you know, it's normally not bonding money that goes in this rail service account. We have put bonding money in it in the past, and we intend on doing that some more. But, you know, there's a common misperception, and I don't think that this – I need to get this on the record because I think the committee is well aware of what Class 3 rail lines are for. But this is only for the Class 3 rail lines, some of those smaller rail lines, like Senator Sharon had just proposed earlier. But you know, this fund is not used by some of the bigger operators. You have a map in your packet.
This one?
Yes, I hope it's the color version. And you can see where the black lines are. Those are Class 3 rail lines. And, you know, they may be a small part of all the lines that we have, but they're a very important part. These are a lot of the shippers that bring commodities back and forth, and they use...
Is the one that Senator Sharon was talking about, is that on here?
I believe that's the black line down here where it says Redwood Falls.
Okay, I see it now.
Mm-hmm. I believe that's an NPLI line.
Okay,
runs up
yes.
To Norwood, Young America.
Okay.
Parts a little bit north, it looks like. So, Madam Chair, this fund has traditionally carried a balance in it. We normally let it carry from year to year to year. What's happened over the past several years is because of budget shortfalls, that fund has been raided. And, you know, it kind of makes it hard for the people that depend on the Mercy account to schedule and plan and get projects out there that are going to benefit this this industry. Right now, there's about $25 million of requests for the Mercy funds. just today. Now, next year it's going to be even more, and the year after that it'll be even more. So I really believe that the bill that we have here that several of the members on the big committee are co-sponsors are would go a long way in providing some of the money that we've taken out of this fund over the past few years. It'd go a long way of putting some of it back. Now,
Senator Murphy, what are the resources that are in this fund? Do they all come from bond proceeds, or are they come from other sources? Just curious.
Madam Chair, I defer to Ms. Boyd.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe that the amounts in the fund are inputs are mostly GO bonds, and then, of course, paybacks from loans made out of the fund.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Boyd. Madam Chair, anyway, that's about all I had, and I'll turn it over to our testifier here, Mr. Rickles.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Rickles, if you would identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dan Rickle. I'm the newly elected president of the Minnesota Regional Railroad Association, so this is I'm kind of a novice at this opportunity, and I appreciate your patience. I'm also president of the Northern Lines Railway. The Northern Lines Railway, to refer back to the map one more time, we operate in pretty much dead center in the state. We're that short black line near St. Cloud. We run between St. Cloud and Cold Spring and out to St. Joseph, Minnesota as well. We're a very small organization. We have 7 employees total, and because of that, we get to wear many hats, so here I am. I'm here this morning, or actually this afternoon, to offer my support for the bill and the support of the 18 small freight railroads for Senator Murphy's bill. As members of the Minnesota Regional Railroad Association, we think it's critical that money is available for us to continue in the loan for rehabilitation and projects. The Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program has done much to help preserve and improve rail service across greater Minnesota and in the 3 decades that it was created, and it can continue to do that with the funding provided in this bill. Over the past 32 years, the state's investment of approximately $35 million has returned nearly $100 million in freight railroad investments. After the railroads were deregulated, the program was created by the Minnesota legislature to help preserve rail service on lines that would have otherwise been abandoned. The MRCY program is actually 5 programs in one, and the handout that we provided explains a little bit about each of the program or each categories of the program. The 2 most active programs are the Rail Rehabilitation Program and the Capital Improvement Program. Both provide interest-free loans for improvements to track and facilities along shortline railroads. Railroads, rail shippers, and the state join together under this program to improve old track, to restore rail facilities, to construct new track, and to construct new shipper facilities as well. The loans are generally repaid through a surcharge on each rail car that's shipped on the line, and as they're repaid, the funds are available to finance new projects. Some of the recent examples of the type of projects that have been financed through the MRCY program include a $264,000 loan to the Minnesota Commercial Railroad in St. Paul to construct 1,300 feet of new track to help relieve congestion. There's a $500,000 loan to the Red River Valley and Western Railroad to add 4,300 feet of yard track in Breckenridge to ease congestion with 100-car unit trains that they handle. There's been a $200,000 loan to United Farmers Co-op in Winthrop to add 2,300 feet of new track for shipping grain and fertilizer by rail rather than by truck. And another $200,000 loan to the Rosse Farmers Elevator for a bulk weigher for weighing shipments in and out of an ethanol plant. Madam Chair, there are many more and very important rail projects that are waiting on the list, which is provided in your packet. There's approximately $25 million more that have been identified, and there's additional, as Senator Murphy said, there's additional waiting in the wings. Unfortunately, the balance of the MRCY account stands currently at about $3 million. Senator Murphy's bill would restore the money taken out of the fund last year and begin adding a bit more to address the outstanding requests that keep coming to the department as the demand for rail shipping service grows. That's why I'm here to encourage you to pass this bill to help restore the funds that were diverted last year and to address the increasing demand for rail service in Minnesota, service that can take from 3 to 4 semi-truckloads off the road for every rail car that is shipped. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rickel. Are there questions or comments for Senator Murphy or Mr. Rickel? Senator Dibble.
I'm sure Senator Murphy's on the committee here.
Yes.
Okay. I was going to move the bill, but he can do that for himself, I guess.
Senator Murphy, do you have a motion then?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'd move that Senate File 642 be recommended pass and be referred to the full committee.
Senator Murphy moves that Senate File 642 be recommended to pass and refer to the whole committee, the full committee. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill will be sent on to the full committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
As far as I know, there's no further business before the subcommittee, and so we stand adjourned.
Thank you.
Yeah. We like this committee.